Sure. All right, so the purpose of the survey that we did today was to assess whether or not physicians supported school-located adolescent vaccination. And I will say ahead of time, Dr. Schley, who will present last, and I work on the same project, so I'll present a brief background, and her background will be much more in-depth. Nothing to disclose. A lot of people to acknowledge. It takes a lot of people to give vaccines in schools. And special thanks to Sarah Rogers, who stuck with me for two entire mailings before we switched to self-adhesive stamps. So the background on adolescent vaccination is that a majority of vaccines today are given to adolescents by primary care providers, but that might not always be the case. In the past decade, expansions in the recommended vaccines for adolescents have changed, and now annual influenza vaccination is recommended for all kids under 18, and there's now an adolescent platform that includes the Tdap, three doses of HPV, and MCV4. And accommodating these additional vaccines represents a tremendous excess in additional office visits. That's not the only impact of these new vaccines. The 2010 National Vaccine Plan states that as the cost of vaccines has increased, financial barriers to vaccination have emerged for not only primary care providers, but health departments and the public. So it's an incredibly costly service to provide. The adolescent vaccinations that have been added are amongst the most expensive in the schedule. It's unlikely that sole reliance on primary care providers to give all of these vaccines will achieve the ideal vaccination coverage rates. And because of these challenges, supplementary venues such as schools have been suggested to increase uptake of vaccine. And school-located vaccination is just as costly, if not more costly, of a service to provide. So in the long term, it's likely that these programs will need to bill insurance to be financially sustainable. School-located vaccination has a rather brief history. To date, it's been used mostly for influenza vaccination and in the 90s in the adolescent populations for Hep B vaccine. But to date, no programs have really provided all adolescent vaccines. For our program, that's 9 vaccines, and offered multiple visits to accommodate something like 3 doses of HPV. Some prior studies have been published that have generally asked physicians about their support for school-located vaccination. But no studies have really been published that specifically ask about physician support for this service for their patients specifically, ask by insurance status of patient or by vaccine type. And we believe it's possible that physicians are less likely to support school-located vaccination for their privately insured patients. So the insurance status specification is really important. With that in mind, the objectives of our survey were to characterize physician attitudes regarding school-located vaccination for adolescents, compare their support for adolescent vaccines as opposed to influenza-only vaccine, and compare physician support by insurance status of their patient. One thing to note is that because Denver's in-school immunization program is in Denver, and Denver is in Colorado, and Colorado is where we sampled, the physicians we sampled, it's likely that many of them have patients that were eligible to receive vaccines with us. So the concerns and the barriers that they discuss are sort of a more real-world setting. We administered a 20-item, 3-page survey. We had 4 outcomes, and I'm going to show those outcomes later, but they are support for school-located vaccination, for influenza vaccination only, and for adolescent vaccines, for privately insured patients and publicly insured patients. That's actually an error. It's a 4-point Likert that we used, and we also assessed physician attitudes, vaccination practices, and demographic characteristics, and we pilot-tested this with 30 Denver docs. We used the Dillman-Taylor design method, which is 4 mailings and a letter over a 10-week period, and we also gave a $5 incentive, which ironically many physicians mailed back to me. We administered this between July and September of 2010 in the state of Colorado, and we sampled pediatricians and family physicians. We sampled from the AAP and AAFP master file, and we were able to sample all 669 eligible pediatricians, and we did a random sample of 668 family physicians to match them. The analysis for the data was summary statistics, chi-squared, and a multivariate logistic regression model. And the reason I had mentioned the private insurance issue earlier is that the models we did focused on support for privately insured patients, and we assessed our models for fit. From our original sample of 1,337, 943 physicians were eligible. We didn't include people not providing primary care in residency, if your mail came back to us, or if you practiced in a subspecialty, and we got 62%. So I want to stop for a second and say that when we made this survey and we filled in the, or we created the attitudinal questions, we created these questions based around some of the literature that says that school-located vaccination challenges continuity of care, medical home, encounters barriers of record scatter, and things like that. So they were really to assess whether or not the literature is true in a setting where school-located vaccination for adolescents is really occurring. So the docs that we spoke to did believe that if patients attended school-located vaccination clinics, they were less likely to attend well-child visits, and over three-quarters felt that way. And over half believe that this service would have a negative financial impact on their practice, whether or not it was from decreased attendance at well-child visits or from difficulty ordering vaccines, because three-quarters believe that this would create a difficulty ordering vaccines. And what that really means to me is that if you have 30 11-year-old girls, and 14 of them are eligible to receive HPV at their school, and that's $200 each, that's just a more complicated math problem that I think most physicians really have time to do or deal with. So it's a real issue about vaccine ordering. Despite all these barriers, the school-located vaccination physicians did believe that it would increase vaccination rates in their practice. So 80% of docs believe that this method works to increase rates. Some literature suggests that vaccinating outside the medical home sort of erodes at the medical home and continuity of care, but the physicians we spoke to, a vast majority didn't believe that they would be relinquishing responsibility for their patients, and less than half thought that it would put their patients at risk for vaccine administration errors or over-vaccination. So docs believe that this is safe, and the fact that only 7 and 9% feel strongly about that really means that they believe this is safe for their patients. Despite all that, 71% did believe that school-located vaccination would cause difficulty keeping accurate records, which is something that has been published time and time again and is related to a number of issues that we're going to get to in a minute. So when we assessed physician support by vaccine type and by insurance, physicians were less likely to support adolescent vaccination and less likely to support either type of vaccination for their privately insured patients versus their publicly insured patients, which is what I thought would be true. But to be honest, when we designed the survey, I thought that the difference would be greater. And I want to draw your attention to the right green bar. When I was thinking about the adolescent vaccination results, I thought this might be confounded maybe by how many adolescents you have in your practice. If you have 11, it might not matter that much, but if half of your practice is adolescents, maybe this is more of an issue. So when we look at it and stratify by the percentage of adolescents you have in your practice, as I would have expected, the rate of very supportive does go down. But what I think is really important here is on the bottom line that in physicians that have 30% or greater, so say if half of your practice is kids between 11 and 18, 48% were still very supportive of their patients receiving vaccines outside of their practice, and over 60% were very or somewhat supportive. When we did our model and assessed factors associated with physicians supporting the service, six attitudes fell into it. So physicians that believed that school-located vaccination clinics were easier and more convenient for their patients or increased vaccination rates in their practice were more likely to support this service for their patients. And those that were worried about relinquishing responsibility, financial impact, vaccine ordering, or risk from over-vaccination were less likely. So about what we saw in the summary statistics. Some additional findings. So in some of the literature, there have been questions about not only do you support this service, but would you be willing to collaborate with other community organizations to provide vaccines outside of the medical home. And what that looks like in Colorado would be, would you provide us with your Medicaid number to bill under Medicaid PCP, which is a type of Medicaid that we have in our state. And of the 76% of docs that participate in Medicaid, less than half were willing to do this. So one of the other surveys that out there says 90% of physicians said they would want to participate, and we found a very different result. And the other thing that was interesting was when we ask about participation in VFC, you see here that 58% participate in VFC. Well, all kids that are Medicaid should be receiving BFC vaccine, and that's 76%. And so if only 58 participate in BFC, there's 18% of docs there that have Medicaid patients that don't do BFC. So are those kids getting vaccinated? Are they being referred out? Are those missed opportunities? Are those doctors vaccinating with private vaccine and eating those costs? I mean, that could be a really serious expense. And 66% of the docs that we talked to participate in the state registry. And both participation in BFC and participation in the state registry were found to be associated with supporting this service. So what that says to me is that people who support community-based immunization programs, it's sort of a proxy to supporting school-based vaccination. The limitations of our study is that we only talked to doctors. We didn't speak to nurses or allied health professionals or administrators. There's some potential for bias, and that people who responded might be more likely to be advocates of vaccination. But our response rate was high enough, and our respondent to non-respondent profile was exactly who you would think would be providing primary care to kids. And I think what the takeaways and the conclusions for this are is that physicians do generally support this, but when you start to ask them about some of the barriers and if this were to happen in their patient population, they really voice some serious concerns. And they really feel differently when you ask them about their patients, you ask them to help, and you ask them about insurance status. And it seems that efforts to understand and really address these concerns are pretty pivotal before moving forward with long-term programs. The other thing that The literature does say that physician recommendation is the greatest predictor of vaccination status. So it's really important that we address these issues before we continue to try and build a sustainable model, because it doesn't seem like it will happen if we don't have the doctors on board with this. So that's it. Thanks.